Don't look now, but there's something funny going on over there at the bank, George. I've never really seen one, but that's got all the earmarks of being a run.
Bedford Falls, It's a Wonderful Life, 1946. Actor Frank Phelan is Ernie the cab driver, talking to Jimmy Stewart as George Bailey. But it does sound a lot like Silicon Valley Bank last week. One place fictional, one place real, but both anchored in the same concept, which is that most of the money at your bank isn't actually at your bank.
When you deposit money in a bank, the bank does not put the money into a safe deposit vault. It invests your money in many different forms of credit, in bonds and commercial paper and mortgages and in many other kinds of loans. In other words, the bank puts your money to work to keep the wheels of industry and of agriculture turning round.
That is President Franklin Roosevelt, March 12, 1933, first fireside chat. It was called the banking crisis. Sound there courtesy of C-SPAN. The fireside chats were this series of radio broadcasts to inform the public on his administration's efforts during the Great Depression, 1933. So now we fast forward, and last week, the FDIC, or the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, takes over Silicon Valley Bank, closing it at least for now. That sent everyone from small business owners to charter school heads into a bit of a panic. And that includes here. And that includes nonprofit organizations, for-profit businesses, smaller, bigger. Why? SVB is based in California, seemingly catered to tech and startups. We have questions. Fortunately, from the newsroom, Beth Healy of WBUR's investigations team joins us for some answers. Welcome back.
Hi, Tiziana.
Hi. Okay, so we set some things up there. Very briefly, what happened to the Silicon Valley Bank that it failed? What does that mean?
Right. So obviously, this is a bank that dealt a ton with tech companies and venture-backed startups, but they also invested heavily in U.S. Treasury bonds. Those seem really safe, right? But when interest rates started going up, the value of the bonds went down. All of a sudden, you had a bank that needed to raise some money. They were borrowing money from the federal government. They tried to do a big stock offering last week. Word got around, like, what the heck is going on at the bank? And you had an old-fashioned bank run. Depositors took out billions of dollars over a couple of days.
And that money wasn't really there.
Right.
Okay. So I actually listened to Here and Now earlier this week because I was still confused about how interest rates could go up and the value of a bond could go down. So let me run this by you. Basically, as I understand it, the bonds were purchased when interest rates were really, really low. And so the thought was, we'll make maturity when we can cash them out really far away from now in the hopes that interest rates will go up, which they were slowly doing. But the bank had to sell some of those bonds to pay for all this money that people were withdrawing, and they hadn't gone up far enough, and so they lost money. Is that basically right?
Correct. And if you could have just held on to those bonds forever, it would have been fine, but they couldn't. They had to sell some. People say regulators should have noticed that folks were not doing a better job managing these long-term investments.
Okay, so I want to bring another voice in here. Jonathan Levine is the CEO and co-founder of the Bedford-based startup Folia Materials. Folia had the majority of its funds. Is that right, Jonathan?
98%.
Great. So that is a majority in Silicon Valley Bank. Welcome. How are you? How is Folia?
It's like doom scrolling and whiplash every single day.
Why?
So it wasn't a couple days. It was less than 24 hours between when apparently some people heard about this Wednesday and Thursday night when this hit the news. So we initiated a wire to move all of our money out Thursday night, and that never went through because by Friday morning, the bank had collapsed.
So what happened to you?
So lost a lot of sleep, did a lot of administrative work. So it's just been a series of like, okay, Monday. So the government takes over Sunday. Like, okay, fine. Monday, Silicon Valley Bank is supposed to be reopened. Well, you can't log in. Monday, my backup bank is First Republic Bank. And what was in the news Monday?
First Republic Bank.
80% drop. And so now there's a question of, well, you know, you have one bank panic and bank run as a small business. I say, okay, well, fine. But if you had two of them in a row, that's pretty bad. So Monday, I went and got a new bank. Well, you don't magically get a new bank, right? It takes them some time. They got to review your stuff. So Tuesday, we have the new bank. Tuesday, I go to send a wire. Well, I woke up 5 in the morning this morning. The wire didn't process. And so I'd gotten nowhere as of 5 in the morning. Well, payroll's today. And everybody,
just to clarify, your people need to get paid for their work today.
Money needs to be pulled out. Friday it issues, but correct. That's how it works. Yeah. Is Wednesday things run, and then Friday people are paid. So the payroll processor cannot actually interact with Silicon Valley Bank right now. None of our payment systems are willing to talk to Silicon Valley Bank. They don't really trust them yet. And so you can't simply run payroll. And so now what do you do? And they didn't process the thing. And so now all of a sudden this morning I'm looking at it and going, hey, wait, maybe we're going to miss payroll. So the first thing you do, and startups are not magical. I think the word startup is really a distraction, is the wrong word. We're a small business. Some of the businesses there are small and medium businesses, but think of it as a bunch of small businesses and nonprofits, by the way, had their money at a bank. It's none of our fault that that bank went under. And this happens at all sorts of banks. There's bank failures and whatever. And you had 37,000 businesses that employed, what, a million people? And so if we didn't have government regulation, if we didn't have FDIC, what happens?
So let's pick
We're
it
all
up
out of
there.
Business.
So let's pick it up there. And Beth, I'm going to come back to the FDIC because this is the other thing people need to understand. The FDIC normally, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, normally says we will protect your money in any bank in the United States up to $250,000. And after that, you're kind of on your own. And that's where we started at the end of the week last week, right? And then there was a change.
That's right. So on Sunday, essentially what happened is the regulators said, okay, we know Americans don't love bailouts, right? We remember 2008. However, this bank turns out to be important to the economy. $209 billion in assets. Believe it or not, that's considered a mid-sized bank. But it's really important, this huge spread of companies. So by Sunday, the Treasury and a bunch of other federal financial officials got together and said, We got to do this. We got to make everybody whole.
And Jonathan, just briefly, because then I want to bring in Kevin Murray. That was essential for you because you had 98% of your assets. You don't have to tell me what that was, but I'm assuming it was a lot more than $250,000.
So the $209 billion, I think, is a distraction for most people. 37,000 businesses that employed, let's say, a million people would have had nothing, right? And so you're all in trouble. You can't make payroll if this doesn't happen. That's the way to think about it.
And that's how you can understand how a collapse then happens. All right. So you mentioned, Jonathan, the nonprofits. And I want to bring that piece in because as this story has evolved, Beth, one of our understandings is that this could affect things like charter schools and affordable housing. Is that correct?
Absolutely. We reported on that. And what we found out is that when a couple of years ago, when Silicon Valley bought Boston Private Bank and Trust, that was a bank that had all kinds of relationships with nonprofits, with way more than a dozen charter schools, with community development corporations. And so what happened is you've got a lot more people affected here than beyond the tech community.
All right, Kevin, do we have you?
You do.
Hi. So Kevin Murray is the interim executive director of the Massachusetts Association of Community Development Corporations. Welcome, Kevin.
Thanks for having me.
And for it's great to have you. I'm sorry it's under these circumstances. For super shorthand, Kevin, a community development corporation or a CDC can be involved in developing and building affordable housing. Is that right?
Yes, that's probably the primary activity, but there's support for small businesses, involvement with first-time home buyers, a whole set of things that come under the heading of community development activities.
Okay.
And they're nonprofit organizations, all of them.
And so you just came from a stakeholder meeting, like just came, with 63 partner organizations that work with this Massachusetts Association of Community Development Corporations. We heard from Jonathan Levine how much strain he's still under. What were you hearing from them?
Jonathan's story sounded very familiar. I think all these organizations are facing the same kinds of problems. There was a little bit of relief that came from the announcement on Sunday that all deposits in the bank would be made whole, all depositors would be made whole. But for these organizations, there's another set of problems, right? Because not only was Silicon Valley Bank understood to be a secure place to hold your money, but because of this, the history that Beth related beforehand about with the Boston Private Bank, et cetera, Silicon Valley Bank had become a major investor in affordable housing projects across the state of Massachusetts. So you had, in addition to people worrying about payroll and immediate needs to have access to their funds, all these people are juggling very highly leveraged real estate projects or deals in which Silicon Valley was an important investor.
That's where the money was going to come from. So not to make light of it, at all, but I'm actually going to use a little more sound here, Kevin, from It's a Wonderful Life, because it's actually pretty helpful. This is a description at the Bailey Bank and Loan about how this lending works. This is George Bailey to the people who want to take their money out. Here we go.
You're thinking of this place all wrong, as if I had the money back in a safe. The money's not here. Well, your money's in Joe's house. That's right next to yours. And in the Kennedy house and Mrs. Maitland's house and 100 others. You're lending them the money to build, and then they're going to pay it back to you as best they can. Now, what are you going to do, foreclose on them?
I got $242 in here, and $242 isn't going to break anybody.
Kevin, according to Commonwealth Magazine, the bank is a lender in 10 out of 64 affordable housing projects in construction. And there's also a risk, as I understand it, that this could have a chilling effect on lending right at a time when affordable housing is maybe the top issue we're talking about here in the Commonwealth.
Right. And a number of these projects that are in process, I'm sure you've heard the discourse from the new administration about the importance of increasing the supply of housing. In terms of the supply of affordable housing, this is the major way in which the supply of affordable housing is being increased. So if there are people in the city of Boston or in other cities around Massachusetts who cannot afford market rent, the only option they have is to access affordable housing in some way through a project like this. So yeah, we honestly don't know the full extent of SVB's involvement in these projects. We're still trying to figure it out. They often had their involvement through what's called a syndicator, so that the syndicator would bring together a number of investors, and SVB might not even immediately be visible in the
But they could project. Be in the mix. So, Kevin, excuse me for interrupting you. I want to turn to Beth Healy here for a minute now. And we've got Kevin Murray, Jonathan Levine, Beth Healy. We're all talking about why the Silicon Valley Bank crisis is echoing here so deeply. You've talked to other affordable housing advocates, Beth.
Yes, and they are very worried. Kimberly Lyle is chief executive of Dorchester Bay Economic Development, and she's relieved, obviously, that they're getting their deposits back. But there are other worries, like with construction loans.
Silicon Valley Bank had really favorable terms. A lot of us worked with them for that reason. And now folks who need construction loans are going to have to find other lenders. And in this, you know, space of elevated interest rates, the cost of building housing that is already astronomical will become more expensive.
And other people we talked to as well talked about the fact that you've got developers out there who eventually are going to have to be paying builders for things that are already under construction. And, you know, that money comes in chunks that they're going to need.
So, Jonathan, I'm going to turn back to you here. Our producer, Amanda Beland, spoke with Allison Byers, who's founder and CEO of a startup called Scroobius, which helps minority-owned companies fundraise. Here were some of her concerns.
They are comprised a team of former operators and founders and investors themselves. So they understood the mechanics and they were willing to fund our bank endeavors that were challenged elsewhere. But they also really were a pillar in Boston for founders, investors, and service providers in terms of the community building, the partnerships that they forged.
So they being SVB, just like Kevin is talking about a possible chilling effect, and Beth was underscoring that for things like affordable housing, what about investment money for small businesses, startups, et cetera?
So people think of banks as being very generic, but they're actually very specialized. And so Silicon Valley Bank, we're a material sciences company. We work in industrial paper manufacturing.
You're with Folia.
With Folia, right. And right now my CTO and COO are in Connecticut driving to Pennsylvania, where they're going to do industrial paper coating at an industrial facility. We do cargo container kind of scale paper rolls, right? Well, Silicon Valley Bank is fine with that. We have a subsidiary in Bangladesh where we sell this as a 20-cent, 20-liter water purifier. Most banks are not willing to look at a business and go, you're doing manufacturing at an industrial scale and you're selling into an emerging market in South Asia, right? We do microwave food packaging. We do antiviral face masks. These are unusual but very traditional industries. And so your typical bank isn't going to touch that space. I think what we're hearing is that SVB was actually in a lot of impact space, right? We're a social enterprise impact company. And we're hearing that they were willing to do unusual deals and work in unusual markets because they had the expertise. And so all of those things are really the deeper thing underlying all of that, including things like investment and how cash moves around and things like that.
So Beth Healy, what do you watch for now? I mean, we are talking about, I'm like hearing the echoes just boom, boom, for could be years.
Well, so the bank markets are kind of roiled right now. There's news still every morning, even globally, about banks being concerned. Also, you've got investigations underway at the federal and state level of the bank to find out whether any of the folks who used to run the bank unfairly enriched themselves when they knew it was going down the tubes. And, you know, people are worried about other banks having runs on them and a kind of credit crunch happening.
All right. I think we have to end it there. I feel like we could talk for five more hours. Beth Healy, WBUR reporter. Jonathan Levine, CEO and co-founder of Folia Materials. Kevin Murray, interim executive director of the Massachusetts Association of Community Development Corporations. Thanks to all three of you. And Jonathan and Kevin, best of luck to you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tiziana.